So welcome to another episode of the 20 Mile Podcast. We're here with another founder to tell their march. And as always, we're really excited to do another great episode and have a great founder. And today we have Saba from Spockit. I'll let him talk a little bit more about Spockit shortly, but you're the co-founder or founder of Spockit?
Well, thanks for having me. I'm one of the co-founders of Spockit. Very, okay. Very two co-founders.
Okay. And so your role, your CEO?
Yes.
CEO. And where are you from? Where are you originally from? You're in Vancouver.
Yeah. So I'm originally Iranian. I moved to Vancouver in 2012 to study medicine at UBC, University of British Columbia.
Okay. Cool. And did you actually complete that degree?
Well, I finished my pre-med at UBC. So you have to go through your bachelor. And when you graduate, then you can apply for med school. I finished my pre-med in 2015, but never applied for med school.
Okay, cool. What hobbies do you have? What do you do when you're not working on Spockit or you're not working or thinking about your venture?
I go for a run pretty much like every morning. Or the weekend, I try to hike. I'll go for long walks that really help. That's still like very much Spockit related, because when I walk, I'm just pretty much thinking about business. but I do like to hang out with friends and go to bars and clubs as well.
Nice. Yeah, you got to have that release, right? You got to get out there and
do something,
you know, walking or you know, hanging out at the pub or the club is a good way to do that.
For sure.
What do you consider as your superpower?
Superpower. Not sure. I don't think I have one, but maybe one thing that I learned about myself in about like 2 years in business is that I think I'm pretty fast learner, but I never go deep in any subject. So I quickly learn things. I get the business to some point, and then I need to someone better to handle it afterward. So I think like I'm very fast learner.
Yeah, and that seems like a super valuable skill as an entrepreneur, to kind of duck into things, get it going, get it started, and then back away and say, you know what, I'm not actually good at that. I got it to this point. Let the experts do their thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So tell me a little bit about Spockit and what Spockit does.
So Spockit is basically a marketplace between suppliers and dropshippers. So from one side, we go and find suppliers, original suppliers, and negotiate discount with them, onboard them to our platform. And from the other side, we have tens of thousands of dropshippers who easily source products and basically selling those products. What we do, we basically removing any inventory risk and any upfront cost for these online retailers. And that's like a huge benefit for them. So basically anyone in the world could start an online store without any upfront costs or holding any inventory.
Right. So that, you know, you're removing that inventory risk and you, for lack of a better term, you're a middleman, but you're improving the risk and speed of delivery of the product.
Yes. I wouldn't call Spockit a middleman because supply chain, at least in my terms, which I don't know how valid it is in the industry, but like middleman is usually sort of part of the supply chain that actually holds inventory. We don't hold any inventory. We don't do any fulfillment. We're pure tech. We're basically connecting the suppliers with those online retailers and automate the entire process in between. And the reason that I don't call us middleman because we don't hold any inventory and we don't do anything. But we're basically enabling all these e-retailers to get access to hundreds of thousands of SKUs of products with a few clicks and get 30 to 50% margin for each sale without really need to buy upfront or warehouse those products.
Wow. Okay, cool. What's an example, like without speaking specifics of a client, unless you can, what's an example of that case, like a use case?
Yeah, so we have like, we're focusing on two different persona of customers. The first persona, which is majority of our customers are basically entrepreneurs. We're enabling them to start their online store and start making some money as a side job or a side hustle. Just imagine how most of the Uber drivers don't work for Uber as a full-time business. It's kind of their side hustle. Mm-hmm. They're driving for like 2-3 hours a day, and then making, I don't know, let's say $100 a day. That's kind of the majority of our customers. They running their businesses to make a few hundred or few thousand dollars a month as profit, and spending very minimum amount of time per day, like let's say 1 hour per day to run their businesses. Because majority of the businesses are automated. And we do have, let's say, like 10 to 15% of our customers that this is actually their full-time business. They're mm-hmm. running multiple stores. For example, we have like one case study is going right now. There is this 28-year-old woman that she started almost like 6 months ago with Spocket, started her first store, started selling almost like 30, 40K a month. And then two months after, she started two other stores, selling pet products and then selling fashion products. And now she has four stores and she's moving a couple hundred thousand dollars a month.
Wow.
With like a very great margin. So the persona could be either you're using Spocket for your side hustle or you're actually using it as your full-time job. I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, no. I'm just trying to get a sense for what it would look like kind of in action. Right. And I think that does a pretty good job. So you're working with people, entrepreneurs that are largely on Shopify, WooCommerce, doesn't matter what platform they're using.
So right now we have full integrations with Shopify. We started that almost like 2 years ago. And then we recently launched the partnership with WordPress and they own WooCommerce.
Right.
And we recently went live with them actually yesterday morning. So yeah, now we are like, we have full integration with those platforms and more are coming soon.
Cool. So how long has the company been running? Like when did you found it and have you pivoted or changed directions or how many times have you?
So we launched Spocket June 2017. So it's been 2 years and 2-3 months. We had small pivots, but not major pivots since then. But if I tell you my story before Spocket, I've done like 30 different things and they all failed in a very short amount of time. But since we launched Spocket in 2017, it hasn't been major pivots.
Okay, cool. So, you know, just to get the listener's story, I'd love to hear pre-Spocket, Saba, and what you were up to and what you've done and mistakes you've made or mini successes you've had.
Yeah, for sure. I'll try to share like some brief story about myself and then how I ended up working on Spocket. So I'm originally Iranian and I had to leave the country in 2012 because when I graduated from high school, unfortunately my country, my parents are not Muslim and they're following a religion called Baha'i. And then we're not allowed to go to university back home. And I very much wanted to study medicine since I was 7 years old. So for me, the only choice was to leave the country. So in about like 3-4 months, went to a few classes, learned how to speak English, learn English, and then apply for a few schools, including University of British Columbia in Vancouver. And then got the offer and decided to come to Vancouver in 2012. And started my pre-med at UBC in 2012, graduated in 2015. But what happened in my last year in school, I started programming, started making iOS apps, Objective-C and Swift, and very much fell in love with it. To the point that I pretty much skipped all my classes in the last year in 2015. And sat in my door and programming for like probably like 15, 16 hours a day. It was my thing. I loved it. I was creating new things every day. So then when I graduated in April 2015, I started teaching at a local bootcamp. I started teaching iOS development. And then a few months after, I built this app called VinChat. It was kind of like Facebook Marketplace. But Facebook Marketplace wasn't around at that time or wasn't as big. And that app started getting a lot of traction, actually. I had around like a few thousand people using it in a daily basis. I think like over 100,000 product was listed on the platform. But then in summer 2016, the cost of server was like a few $100, and I just didn't have the money to pay for it. And I remember calling my dad, asking him to give me a few $1,000 to pay for the servers. And he said, I only pay you for 1 month, but not after that. And 1 month wasn't enough. So I shut down that business. And honestly, at that time, I really didn't know, like, there are investors out there that actually give you the money. I didn't know, like, people give you money to build your business. Because, I mean, if you told me there are investors out there that give you money to build your business, I was like, what's wrong with them at that time? Because, like, if they have the money, why they're not doing it themselves? So, I mean, what happened after I shut down that business, which was called VinChat? In September 2016, I got into a program called The Next Big Thing. So Ryan Holmes, the founder of Hootsuite, he started a program at Hootsuite, which they were picking 10 entrepreneurs under 25 and giving them office space at Hootsuite headquarters in Vancouver. So I was part of that program for 8 months. Probably tried like 10 different things and they all failed. But all of them were in e-commerce and commerce space. So at the end of that program, I was kind of, I really needed to make some money. And I felt that probably e-commerce is a good way to do it. So I started my own e-commerce shop and I reached out to almost 400 suppliers on Etsy.com and Fancy.com. Basically told them that, give me the CSV of your products. I put it on my e-commerce store. I sell it for you. Just give me 20% discount. I'll take that 20% and I pass you the other 80%. And just fulfill the order, send it to my customers directly. So, I mean, at that time, I thought like, this is like very genius idea. I thought like I came up with that idea because I really didn't know anything about e-commerce. I didn't even know what Shopify is at that time. And I thought like, oh, wow, this is like crazy idea I came up with. But then after I got into it, I found out that dropshipping been around for almost 30 years. So what happened was after reaching out to all these 400 suppliers, 99% of them said no. But what I did, I wrote down all the reasons that why every single of them rejected me. And then at the end, when I was like really, really disappointed, I looked at all those reasons and I found all of them around 7-8 problems. Things like real-time inventory update, not able to give me discount because I'm just one e-commerce store, the manual process. There was like 7-8 problems. And I thought, okay, what if I build a platform to solve those problems? And not only helping myself to build an e-commerce store and maybe help another 20 people to build their e-commerce stores. So at that time, I literally have like $200 in my bank account. I went to almost like 10 banks. I swear that I'm like not making anything up. I went to like 10 banks and I asked them for a credit card and they all said no. And the reason is because I'm still an international student. I don't have my, I had to work, postgraduate work permit. So I'm not a permanent resident of Canada yet. So no one really gave me credit cards. And like one bank literally told me that, give us $1,200 so we give you $1,000 credit card. I was like, I had the $1,200, like I didn't need that $1,000 credit card. So I did a few things, but also I started finding three other jobs. So I was working at SportCheck, I was making apps for other people, and also I was teaching part-time at the local bootcamp. And I was working full-time at Spocket too, so make enough money to hire two co-op students from UBC. And I got a few grants as well. So I hired two co-op students, literally have 5 weeks to build the MVP or the beta version of Spocket because just didn't have more money to sustain. And we built it. We built it in 5 weeks, probably the worst MVP in the world. But we launched it, and almost 6 weeks after, we had 150 people using our platform.
Wow.
And 10 of them started paying us. So this is in summer 2017. So 2 months after, a local VC reached out to us, and they said, we would like to invest in the company. So they gave me $500,000 check. This is like exactly 2 years ago. And then we used that money. I hired 4 or 5 people. And then in January 2018, we got into a program called Techstars Seattle. I mean, if you guys don't know what Techstars is, it's basically Y Combinator, Techstars, and 500 startups are the best accelerators in the world. And Techstars is the biggest one. So now what happened was because of sort of US travel ban, I applied for a US visa, but I didn't get the visa at that time. So my team moved to Seattle, and I was working remote with them from Vancouver from January till April 2018. And then in August 2018, we closed our seed round. And then since then, been just growing the team. We have grown over 12x in the past 12 months. Grown the team from 5 to almost 25. We're looking for another 10 right now. Yeah, things are good right now.
So yeah,
that's kind of like my story.
Yeah, no doubt in fast forward. But it sounds like, you know, because we started talking about pivots, it sounds like a lot of those pivots kind of happened pre-company, which is kind of unique in your story, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've done like small pivots since launch Spocket, but it hasn't been a major pivot because I think I was kind of forced to do the research before actually building the software because we just didn't have enough money to sustain for too long. So I really needed to like understand the market and talk to as many customers as possible. I talked to over 400 suppliers, and in the retail side, I basically built this, I started this Facebook group on, obviously on Facebook. I started like reaching out to a lot of people that are facing issues, like inventory issues, and then invited them to the Facebook group. So I started to acquire in the retail side. So I started acquiring the retailers like pretty quickly as well, because I started that community early on, because we just simply didn't have the money to spend on marketing.
Yeah.
So I had to be a bit creative in terms of user acquisition initially. And by the way, that group has been a great user acquisition channel for us. Right now we have over 32,000 members.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's super cool, because it's such a great place to just get user feedback and find out, you know, what problems you can solve. Like you kind of started, right? Like you were talking to those other e-commerce players and finding out where they're struggling or where you could help. And then you figure out what solves that. And so I love that constraint when you don't have the money, what can you do? And so creating that Facebook group obviously is pretty important to the success. You may have missed that if you had funding at that point, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think funding is good at the right time. If it's not the right time, it would basically, in my opinion, it would kill the creativity of the team.
Right.
Too much money is definitely not good, again, in my opinion.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, and it sounds like you kind of like money came to you rather than you going out and you know doing the rounds of looking for funds, right? Someone came to you and
I mean, even right now, since the inception of Spocket, we never went out there to look for money. It was mostly money coming to us, even like currently for potentially our next round. I haven't done much reach out, just being inbound.
Yeah. Very cool. So where does, you know, you talked a lot about being in medicine and that you wanted to do that from the age of 7. I'm curious to know why you headed the entrepreneurial path, and you've kind of touched on a little bit, but do you still feel that draw to medicine, or does that interest you, or is there something more like, I wanted to help people and I'm doing that just in a different way? And maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Even if I study medicine one day, I don't want to be a doctor. Maybe it just study because I love medicine. I still watch like all the documentaries about genetics or biochemistry. I love it, but I don't want to have it as my job. But I mean, the shift was almost in my last year in school at UBC in summer 2014. So it's pretty much in my last year, pretty much most of the students are back home with their families. And I'm in my dorm at UBC. It's during sunset, so it's a bit depressing. I'm watching YouTube and I see this 17 years old guy called Nick. I can't really pronounce his last name. He made an app and, called Sumbly, and he sold it to Yahoo for $30 million. And he was so young that he couldn't even transfer the money to his account. He had to send it to his parents' account. so it was like a trigger in my mind that, because what I always thought is that if you want to learn programming, you have to go to university, sit in the classes, have the best profs to teach you. But I was totally wrong, because like at that moment I felt that if this 17 years old guy can do it, can learn programming at home, I'm in my third year at school, I know more math and physics than him, I probably should be able to learn myself too. So from that night, which was literally August 4th, 2014, I never forget that, I started like learning how to program. All I did, I bought $10 Udemy course and downloaded the Apple book, which was teaching you how to build iOS apps using Objective-C. So I started learning Objective-C and Swift in my dorm. And I think that's kind of shifted my path, because in that year, I just so much felt in love with programming to the point that I pretty much skipped all my classes. And yeah, I mean, I might go back to medicine one day, but again, I don't want to have that as my career. I always want to be in tech, but I really want to learn about the human body more. So yeah, I might end up studying medicine somewhere.
Yeah, or finding another entrepreneurial journey that heads down that path. And so you may end up there just in a different path than you expected.
Exactly. That's what I actually think, that how could I combine tech and brain research, because I'm like very much interested in brain and spinal cord. Maybe at some point in the future, how can I combine those two together?
Right, for sure. You touched on a couple things. You mentioned that young entrepreneur that sold to Yahoo. I don't know how old you are. Kind of curious about that. And you know, it's not so much the specifics of how old you are, but you know, you're kind of thrust into a leadership position. You know, you're making big decisions, you're talking to investors, you know, how do you not get taken advantage of? How do you lead your company? And maybe you can just talk a little bit about that, because, you know, I'm sure there's lots of entrepreneurs out there or people that want to be entrepreneurs. They can be a little bit scary to be like, hey, you're the CEO of this company and you're, you know, seem pretty young or maybe even inexperienced. And maybe you can help the listeners understand how you deal with that and kind of how that's gone, or even some mistakes you've made along the way.
Sure. I mean, in terms of age, I'm 28. In terms of, I mean, the next question, I think I made a lot of mistakes and I learned my lessons. And I think the biggest lesson that I learned is that to not make big decisions on my own and have a group of people that I do really trust, including my advisors, to like discuss things with them all the time, from like the important hirings to fundraising to sort of the new products I've been launching. I pretty much have like a weekly call with my advisors to make sure that we back and forth about all this. And I think it was hard to find the right people, but now that I have them, it's like very, very helpful. And usually these are usually the people that have done it before. They either been entrepreneurs, they built big businesses, they had big exits, or they're like in the VC world, and I do very much trust them. So I think that's been the biggest help for me.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's you don't want to go it alone, Right. And I think that we chatted recently when I was in Vancouver. Are you a part of like EO or what is it, YPO or any of those entrepreneurial groups, Ace Tech?
No, I'm not.
No?
I'm okay. Not part of any sort of community. Am I? No, I don't think so. But it's mostly I have like one-on-one conversations with people that I think they really know what they're doing.
Cool.
I think there's a lot of noise out there. I even get like a lot of requests. People want to be an advisor. And when you look at their background, you see that they actually are not as solid as they're saying.
Sure.
So it's really hard to find the right people to help you out.
Yeah. And I can imagine that trust piece is just so important. Like if you truly feel like you can trust them, then you can listen to them and take their advice and hopefully learn from them. So that's got to be very important.
Yeah. For sure.
Where does this drive come from? What's fueling this, right? Like, do you know where that kind of comes from?
I'm not sure, but like, I mean, I just feel like every morning that I wake up, there's like a fire inside me and I just really have to go and cool it down by like working really hard. I honestly don't know. I don't know. It's great though. It's like, I really, really love what I'm doing. Like from the early morning that I wake up, I can't wait to come to the office. So for like a few weeks, I had to be in China for some of the conversations that we have with some potential partners and going to SF. I came back last week and US trips. And it's just like, can't wait to come back to the office and work. With the team and be hands-on. I don't know where it's coming from, honestly.
Yeah, cool. No, I can see it. I mean, even as you were talking about that, it was coming out in your face. It's like there's such passion. So be interesting to check back with you and see if you've kind of figured out what that's driving or what's driving that. What do you see specifically in related to e-commerce or retail? What is the future? We hear a lot about AI and, you know, some of these big retailers going under and lots of opportunity with Shopify. And what's your take on it?
Specifically about e-commerce or the entire commerce?
Yeah. What do you think? Yeah. I think that, you know, maybe you'll touch a little bit on retail and what's happening in sort of the offline world, but what do you see as the future of e-commerce?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, e-commerce is huge and it's growing really rapidly. If you look at some of the stats, I believe that's the fastest growing online market, and it's going to pretty much double in the next 3 years. I think it's around like $2.8 trillion now, and it's going to cross like $4 trillion in the next 3 years, which is huge. It's massive. Just imagine what it is right now, and it's going to double in the next 3 years. That's insane. Mm-hmm. But I think like it's more important than what data says. I was actually listening to this podcast that Harley, CEO of Shopify, was speaking, and he basically mentioned that everyone thinks that physical retail is dying and everything is moving online, but that's actually not true. Just because e-commerce is growing doesn't mean that physical retail is dying. Just because some of those big stores are dying doesn't mean that entire physical retail is dying. Actually, physical retail is growing. But the reason that e-commerce is growing very fast is because the entire market is growing. Obviously, the future of e-commerce is huge. The convenience and especially with the fast shipping that we see these days, Amazon offers the same day shipping and other shipping companies, FedEx, USPS, they have to catch up at some point to start offering the same fast shipping, even same day shipping. So that's just gonna make e-commerce better and better over time.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that the physical retail is going away.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to change, but you know, we're not really sure in which ways or what that might look like. It's fun to speculate, but who really knows? And maybe you have some of the, you know, you can see some of the data behind the scenes. But
Yeah, I mean, the way that I see a physical retail changing, and that's why I really love what we're doing, because I think we're not solving just a problem for now, but we're actually going to change the way that retail works in the future. One of the biggest issues for retail and even for online retailers is holding inventory. It's very costly. So imagine you have a shoe in your store, and you need to have 10 sizes for it, and you need to have a few stocks for each size. Warehousing those and tracking those, it's very time consuming, it's very expensive. So in the way that I believe the physical retail will change is basically inventory will be removed from the local warehouses. Mm-hmm. It's funny that Toby, the CEO of Shopify in 2013, he had an interview and he said something like very interesting. He was like, the future of physical retail is going to change a lot. And this is the example. In like 5 years, when you go to a physical retail to buy a shoe, you won't take the product right away. Because it's pretty annoying. You go to one store, you buy a shoe, and you have a bag, and then you go buy a t-shirt, you have another bag, another one, another bag, and you have to carry this all home. But the way that it would change is basically you go in one store, you try the shoe, you like it, you pay for it. And then you go to another store, you pay for it. And then you go home, and all those products is at home six hours later, like 10 hours later. So in surface, like what you see is that convenience for customers. But behind the scenes, you're basically saving trillions of dollars that retailers have to spend on inventory and warehousing. Because they don't have to have the inventory in each stores. Mm-hmm. Basically, you make a payment, they have like a one central warehouse that they keep just shipping it to all these customers' houses. Yeah. And that's basically what we do. We're using a model called dropshipping, which basically removing inventory for online retailers at this time, and in future we would get into physical retail as well. It's because you as a retailer can rely on us that we would ship the product on time and fast to your customer, right, and you don't have to hold the inventory.
Yeah, very cool.
And that inventory distortion problem is over $1 trillion issue every single year.
Right. Yeah, and that's really neat to think about, right? And be interesting to see that future. We're not quite there yet, but I never thought of the consumer benefits to that, because you are paying for the inventory to be stored, right? There's an added cost there that if you took that away, that would potentially benefit the consumer, right?
Quality, cheaper price as well.
Yeah, cool. What to date has been your biggest challenge? Something you've had to overcome or struggled with, or just general, you know, ongoing challenge?
I think building the team, considering that team, I would say not just me, like all this, I think accomplished people in tech would say that team is the most important part of any business. A great team could turn kind of a stupid idea to like be like a really great company. I mean, the case is probably Snapchat. I mean, you just like take a 10 seconds video and you send it to someone, but you turn it to like, I don't know, $25 billion IPO. Or if you have a wrong team, you could really mess with a really good idea. So I think like building a great team, it's been the most challenging and the most rewarding challenge that I faced. I really truly believe that we have like a super strong team right now, but it took me almost like 2 years to build that. Mm-hmm. I learned that by experimenting and by doing a lot of mistakes. And I honestly really hope that I had people around me and advisors around me early on to really help me out to find high quality candidates. I think our team is like very strong right now, and I just want to make sure that we keep the standard high and we continue building a very solid team. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned earlier, it's not all about working 18 hours a day. I deal with people that work in 12 hours a day and they're really not accomplishing much. And you have some leaders that they're spending 6 hours, 7 hours a day and they killing it. So it's not really about the hours, is more about having the right KPI in place and making sure that those people would hit the KPIs. If they want to work 4 hours and they still hit the KPI, awesome.
Yeah, no, I wish more people understood that, right? Like if you get the job done, it doesn't really matter how long it took, then let's measure the value and the exponential growth over how many hours you spent in the office. I think we have a really tough time doing that, right? Like, you know, it's kind of funny because you and I are here at 6:15 doing this, which is fun, right? But it is, you know, it is work. But how do you balance that? Or do you put any checks in place where you're like, I'm just not going to work past a certain time, or I don't work on the weekends, or I make sure to always take breaks during the day? Or is there anything that you're doing that you could share with the listeners that, you know, because you seem like you're pretty upbeat, you're not burnt out, you never really experienced any of that. We talked about, you know, a little bit about anxiety and depression, and you're not really experiencing that. What are some things you think maybe you are doing that are beneficial to you not falling into those traps?
So in terms of me not burning out, I think I burn out a few times very badly. And I think what really helped me was to onboard some really solid managers that really, they started moving the company forward much faster, and they basically removed a lot of work from my table. They really very much helped me out, and that's why I'm continuously trying to do that, to really bring people that have very high standards as the managers. That helped me out a lot as well. And people that I can trust that give my daily, day-to-day tasks to them. But I think, again, myself, I do other things. I'll make sure that I do at least like a half an hour to 1 hour exercise every day. Either from like in the morning that I wake up, or like after work, I'm going to gym after this podcast. It really makes me feel good. I've had one very big problem in the past, I would say 6 months, and that's my sleep. I don't get enough sleep. I think it's mostly because there's a lot of things happening in my brain all the time. A lot of ideas and a lot of things always in my head, which messes up with my sleep, but that's pretty much the only issue that I'm facing at this time.
Yeah. It sounds kind of weird, but I use blue blocking sunglasses at night. It's not going to stop the thoughts, but because there's blue light in like TV and phones and screens, if you're around those things, it will help your brain kind of shut down and go into sleep mode. Cause I think it helps you produce more melatonin. It's worth trying. The other thing too is, meditating, even at night, just to kind of sit with those thoughts and let them process and work themselves out so that you can shut your brain down.
Yeah, actually you posted it on Facebook that you've been doing it for 8 years in row, like not missing out a day.
I'm coming up on 5 years of meditation. Wow. And that, yeah, it's a problem because it's like an addiction now, but because I want to keep that streak going. But it really, for me, it helps me just kind of sit with my thoughts and understand what's going on so that you're not just like plugging away and just plowing through things. You're like, okay, this is why I'm frustrated or moody, or I do need more sleep or whatever it is. But I read a book by Matthew Walker on why we sleep, and it's changed my thoughts on it. But it is hard. Sometimes you just wake up and you're up for an hour, or you just can't get to sleep.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing that I did, I ordered a new mattress yesterday. So I'm like very comfortable when I sleep.
Yeah. And,
meditation. I did meditation for a month, but I've never been like consistent on doing it for a long time. So I have to get that too.
Yeah. Cool. If there's anything in your journey along this way that you would change, what would it be? If there is something, right? That, cause I'm sure that some of those pivots or challenges that you faced probably helped you, but is there anything you would change
in the past 2 years or in general?
In general, you could talk about like your journey.
Honestly, I wouldn't change anything. Like, anything good happened was great. Anything bad happened, I learned a lot of lessons from it. No, I think the journey has been amazing. I wouldn't change anything.
Cool. Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to say, I should have gone into medicine.
Oh, no. I think that was a great decision for me. Yeah. I love like way more. But maybe like one of the things I would probably do earlier on would surround myself with like good advisors, people that can actually help me out to make some better decisions. I made some wrong decisions and it really deterred me for like a long time. But I mean, everything is solved, but I wish I had people that asked them questions early on. And maybe just because I was immature in terms of like a business mindset, and I never tried to seek those people. And I thought like, I have to learn everything by experiment. But I think that was a big mistake.
Yeah. Cool. No, I appreciate you sharing that. And sometimes it's tough because the journey is what it is. We were talking about this before. Everybody just thinks success looks like this. And we know that it's kind of all over the place. And then you kind of pop out and then maybe you get a little bit of this, but it doesn't always stay there. But
I mean, it might look like this on graph after 5 years, but if you zoom in,
right,
there are a lot of up and downs.
Yeah, but without those up and downs and without those challenges, you may not arrive where you have today.
Totally. I don't see like just in terms of business, even personally, like all those up and downs very much help you to be a critical thinker and be a more mature person. Cool. I think I was very mature a few years ago. It very much helped me in my personal life as well.
Yeah, no, that's very true, right? How much it's applied potentially to personal life and some of the lessons you've learned that you probably wouldn't get anywhere else. You probably wouldn't get in school.
True.
All right. Cool. Well, we'll wrap it up there. I appreciate you taking the time and going deep and sharing your story. And really, again, just appreciate that that you've taken the time to share with us everything that's happened over the last couple of years, and then beyond that as well. You know, I really am happy for all your success you've had with Spocket, and sounds like you're ripe to continue to grow and, you know, maybe be bigger than that dumb idea Snapchat in no time.
Yeah, I guess it all depends on the team. And if we're at the very good time to like scale up and hopefully see us as a decent business in a few years.
Awesome. All the best, man. Thanks to yourself and thanks to the listeners for tuning in today. Definitely check us out at our website, 20mile.co. or follow us on all social media channels at 20mile.co. And if you think of it, you think of someone that would be great to share this with, share it with one other person that would want to check this podcast out. And until then, keep on marching.